views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Moms, are you ready to become enlightened, empowered, and stress-free? Well, get ready because you are about to tune into vibrant, powerful moms helping everyday women create an extraordinary life with Debbie Pokornik. Each week, Debbie discusses topics to help you become self-aware, inspired, and on track to create the life you crave. It's time to stop settling and start thriving. And it all begins now on Transformation Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Vibrant Powerful Moms Show. I'm your host, Debbie Pokornik, and my mission is to help you tune in to your vibrant and powerful self so that you can create a life you love at work, at home, and at play. My guest today is Michelle Dickinson Moravec, a passionate potter who loves to spend time with her two Jack Russell Terriers, Chloe and Trooper, and her rescue cat, Chance. Michelle is an associate director with Johnson & Johnson, a company which she just adores and refers to as her second family. She's designed and implemented a powerful wellness after-school enrichment program called Perfect, Just the Way You Are, and has recently published Breaking Into My Life, a brutally candid memoir about growing up with a bipolar mother. Today, Michelle is here to share snippets from her story and highlight some of the tools and techniques that she has honed as a result of her experience. Michelle, welcome to the Vibrant Powerful Mom Show.
Thank you so much for having me, Debbie.
Oh, so happy that you're here. So why don't we start with having you give a brief synopsis of your story so people know where you're coming from. Now, I recognize that you have just written a 200-plus page book on this topic, so we know you're really going to be paring it down, but maybe you could just share some of the highlights.
Sure. I grew up with a bipolar mother, and so my memoir really captures what that lived experience was like for me as a child caregiver. To her. So the challenges that I endured, the experiences that I had, and even the silver lining that I gained from that experience, as well as the lingering impact that it's had on my life as an adult.
Yes. There was so many really gripping parts in your story, but a big part that really stood out for me was how your mom was so super loving. Like, she wasn't just a great mom for the first 5 years. She was an awesome mom. And how you really held on to that with the hope that, okay, where is she? Is she back? And she'd be back for a moment and then gone. And so, yeah, there's just so many pieces that you went through in that time that it is all shared in the book. So it's very...
Yeah. I mean, as a little one, I remember some of the most loving experiences with her, and that kind of became the yardstick, right? That was the good memories that I would really hold on to and just, you know, pray and hope that she would return to. But it was very few and far between those opportunities where she got to really just return to her joyful, loving self, just because she was struggling so much with her mental illness.
Right. And I think as humans, we quickly figure out, I mean, we're always looking for patterns, routines, things to help us in life, right? Yeah. And when, you know, that suddenly is gone, it becomes very hard to trust. So I noticed in your story, you were often saying like, oh, is this going to last? Like, is it here for a little while or just for a moment?
But right. And children like cling to consistency. They look for that routine. That routine is really what grounds them. And I didn't really have that fundamental consistency in just her disposition and how I was feeling about myself and about life.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's switch gears here and talk about school a little bit. Like, I'm really totally amazed, even though I know that things have changed hugely from when you and I were young, but that you could miss that much school, that you could be so preoccupied with home so often, and that it really didn't raise any alarm bells at the school. Like, you weren't getting any extra support or guidance or help from them, at least not that you talked about in the book. So can you talk a bit about what you think might have been helpful for the school to do when you were growing up in this toxic environment?
Yeah, I think, you know, nowadays parents and schools are so much more connected with, you know, technology. But back then it was merely a phone call to be out of class for a period of time and a note. And so, you know, there would be times when my mother would be so fragile that my dad just didn't want to leave her alone, but he had an obligation to get to work. And, you know, it might have been on the heels of him being out of work for a few days to look after her, but she wasn't to the point where hospitalization was necessary. So he would look to me to stay with her. And, you know, that could be anywhere from a week to 2 weeks. And you could easily disguise that by, you know, oh, you know, you have a respiratory infection or the flu or whatever. And then, you know, I would have to go back to school and try to catch up. Right. So, I mean, I think, you know, I think the school did the best that it could for the period of time that we were in at that point. But honestly, I think, you know, just being tuned into to kids nowadays is really important. I took and made a lot of effort to conceal and keep this a family secret. I didn't want anybody to know about it.
Right.
Even my friends. So, you know, they didn't know what they didn't know. And I, you know, was just at fault too for hiding it. You know, I don't think that would happen today. I think if you were out of school for an extended period of time, there would be warning signs and you would have much more intervention. So.
Right. So, what do you think, though, would happen, like just picturing yourself as you were at that time, if the school had tried to intervene? So now maybe they phone your mom and they say, you know, what's going on? Is a problem. Would that have been helpful?
Yeah, I don't know, because she was really, I mean, when I was staying home with her, she would pretty much sleep all day long and wouldn't answer the phone. So she probably wouldn't have even answered the phone, because she was at that point in a very deep depression and she was about to be hospitalized. So, you know, I don't think that would have made a big difference in my scenario, just because she was just pulled from the game of life, basically, because of her illness.
Right. But it's an interesting thing to think about, because, you know, you talk about her being so volatile and explosive at other times, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, when she was there, she was really there.
Yeah.
Oh. And so you can imagine, because I think nowadays what would happen is the teacher would call after you've come back to school. And then by law, they would actually have to call Child and Family Services or whatever it's called, wherever you happen to live. Mm-hmm. But call in social services, because they would be concerned for your welfare.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. Yikes. Okay. Sorry. I took us off track there a little bit, but I had to. So you talk a fair amount in the book about not being comfortable in your own skin. And you even share a story, well, several stories of, you know, going to parties and feeling like you don't belong. But the one that really stood out for me is where you're just absolutely horrified at seeing your mom dancing in the hallway naked.
Yeah.
And that was very interesting to me as a social worker. That right away kind of puts up a flag of, huh, what's going on with her self-image that she's so horrified by this? And then you went on to talk about changing in gym class and how you just hated having to change in front of the other girls and that kind of thing. So can we talk about that a little bit, about your self-image during that time and how that affected you?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think, you know, it's normal for young girls to try to figure out, you know, their own bodies, how they're feeling about themselves, their own self-confidence. You know, my mom was not the person to remind me that I was good enough. Right. If anything, when she was angry or when she was upset with me, she would like cut me at the knees and really just diminish who I was as a person, really like make me feel horrible about myself. And, you know, you compare yourself to others when you're in school, it's normal. But, you know, she didn't particularly demonstrate that she loved herself. And that was because of her mental illness, I'm quite sure.
Right.
So, you know, seeing her in these manic states where she's just like running around and it was naked, and it was such an uncomfortable thing for me. And it was so bizarre because I was just, you know, trying to figure myself out. It left me very confused and left me very, you know, I guess just very insecure about who I was. And it's like, was that the model of what a woman looks like, you know? So then that left me even more perplexed, right? So it was a very rough period, and it plays into the fact that I've forever had self-confidence issues. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I mean...
Absolutely. Well, and interestingly to me, it's, you know, you were working so hard to always cover up what was going on at home. And there's your mom, in this case, fully exposed, right? Mm. So yeah. Probably there was that little connection to, no, yeah. We can't do that. We can't show any of these pieces of ourselves, including right. your naked body. Right. And that would have been so difficult. I mean, I remember gym class too, and I remember not particularly enjoying changing in gym class, but I didn't have a lot of the things going on to bring me down. I was just bringing it on myself. So.
Right. And then, you know, and your mother plays such a valuable role in reminding you of your own beauty and your own self-worth. And I would hear my girlfriend's moms, like, you know, just genuinely acknowledge who they were. And that was such a gap for me. Like, I never got that from my mom. Even when she was in her good mood or stable, she was not about to be, you know, boosting me up at all.
Right. Right. Which is very interesting. My mom was more the, you know, outside in the garden, a baseball player type person. Like, she was just always, I guess what I'm really saying is she tended to be more masculine than feminine in that way. Mm-hmm. So there wasn't a lot of emphasis at all put on looking good or, you know, wearing makeup or doing yourself mm-hmm. up or any of that kind of stuff. But she also didn't stop us from doing it. So, yeah. Cool. Mm. Cool. So I'm a really big believer in the idea that things don't happen to us, but they actually happen for us, which I know is often very difficult for people to hear. I think you figured that out for yourself as well. But for many other people, they, you know, will often look at their journey and they go, no, there's no way I chose this. Right? But I think that there's always benefits that can be identified. So I'm wondering if you can share some of the gifts that from your situation with your mom that you happen to get from it.
Sure. I mean, it's funny because before I went through a lot of my own self-discovery and healing, I couldn't see them. But you know, I got really connected to what you just said, right? Life is always happening for us and not to us. And even in hindsight, if we can reflect on the good that comes from an unfortunate situation, I think there's power there. So for me, I think, you know, gosh, when you watch a mom cry and struggle so much, it really has you get how, you know, how life for her occurred to be so difficult. She couldn't see the beauty in just the basic day that would come. And for me, it's like, I feel like my zest for life was really born out of seeing her pain and her inability to really, you know, be like, oh, it's a brand new day. Let's go crush it, you know? So I think my perspective about that, absolutely, you know, my desire to help other people and to help them navigate, I've always wanted to better myself. And I think it's because of not knowing who I was growing up. And so this self-discovery, like, I've been on a mission to like really unpack, you know, who I am as a person and how I can show up the best version of myself. And I think that I wouldn't have these drives in me if I didn't endure what I did.
Oh, right. Yeah. And I think also, like you mentioned in there about your ability to read the energy of a room, You know, yeah. You became super aware, which is often the case when someone's in any kind of abusive situation, but they become very, very tuned in when they walk into a room. So I think that is probably quite a gift as well. Interesting, though, I have to say that, you know, when I was reading your story, one of the things that really jumped out for me was your zest for life, even from a young age where you inherited really two siblings and you were just so excited and, oh my gosh, I get to play with these guys all the time. You know, like that came through for me, that you really had this incredible zest for life. And maybe part of it was to even be that shining star for your mom when she, you know, when nothing was really getting through, that right. That little bit might, of course, it might not always be accepted the way you wanted it to be, but
yeah, I mean, that's part of the reason why I was always trying to be like that funny girl in school, because if I could bring sunshine to other people, I mean, if it worked at home sometimes, maybe it would work and I could help other people like smile. I think that's why I took that on as well, you know, was I just knew, you know, how good it felt to feel good after witnessing someone's deep depression and crying and not being able to do anything about it.
Absolutely. So I think you're right too, that compassion turned on, you know, 100 times over from that, which is not what a lot of people would have done. Mm. Right? They don't turn on their compassion. They turn it off more and try to distance themselves. So So one of the other things that really stood out for me throughout your story is the contradictions that you were experiencing, like really loving your mom so much, but at the same time hating the unpredictability and the volatility of your home environment. So wanting to be there, hating being there. Yeah. And, you know, that even came out when you're at school and school was your escape. And so you loved it and yet you felt awkward there and sometimes ill at ease, you know, trying to figure out ways to get people to like you and, you know, like you didn't belong. So I'm wondering if you could identify some of the coping mechanisms that you tried in order to survive through those years, because I think it's important for us always to tune into those kinds of things.
Yeah, sure. I mean, you know, the one I just mentioned was key. I was, you know, drawing some kind of attention to myself and trying to make other people laugh, you know, even gossiping and sharing things I shouldn't have shared to get attention because I had something someone wanted, some information or something. Right. But I think for me, the biggest coping mechanism was finding my youth group and finding my home, my space of acceptance and love. You know, school itself and kids in general, school populations, you know, you don't have opportunities to really connect as much as when you go to a youth group and you're surrounded by people who are similar in their thinking. I found my home there and I found an opportunity to feel accepted. And that was like the first time I shared my story about what was going on in my home life and the outpouring of love and the outpouring of support and just feeling accepted. I think that was a huge coping mechanism and really a resource of strength for me growing up.
Yeah, absolutely. Finding that resource was huge, or at least it came across as huge in the book.
Yeah.
I think too, though, some of the coping mechanisms that really jumped out for me too was your ability to accept reality, even though you didn't like reality, you really seemed to, all right, this is what it is, you know, so I'm going to go in my room now and hide out. Yeah. Or I'm stuck outside here in the hot sunshine and, you know I'm stuck here. So you just accepted what was going on, or you seemed to. So I think that was a really big one. And with that was living in the moment, switching gears when your mom switched gears.
Yes.
You know, so she wants to have fun. She wants to do crafts with me now. She wants to dance. I'm there. Yeah. I'll do it because this is the moment for it.
So. Yeah, but you know, it's so funny. Like, yeah, those were great coping mechanisms, but I'm just having like this epiphany as you're sharing this with me. And it's funny because like, I think that as a result of the first example that you gave about just being accepting the scenario or the situation as it was and learning how to cope with it is a struggle that I have as an adult. not walking away from situations where really where I don't have to be, but yet I stay because that's how I was groomed, right? You stick it out, you just deal with it.
Yes. Oh, and I love that you just said that because that is really why it's important to identify our coping mechanisms. Because what worked for us then, what we had to do out of necessity, isn't necessarily what we need to do with everyone for the rest of our lives.
Yep.
So beautifully said. Love it. So what about, those were your coping mechanisms. Those helped you to survive and get through that time. But what kinds of things really stand out as helping you to heal?
I was angry for a really long time. I will not hide that. I was really angry at my mom. I blamed her for a lot of things that unfolded as an adult. And I really was frustrated with the way she continued to manipulate me, even as a young adult, when I wasn't even living with her. So I think the things that really started me down my healing journey was probably the therapy that I had, that really started to help me understand how, as a caregiver or someone with a loved one with mental illness, how we really have to create boundaries and make sure that we're taking care of ourselves first, and maybe even step back, as painful as that is. So I think learning to put myself first was such a foreign concept that I initially got in counseling. Mm-hmm. And then I of course had to keep going because therapy wasn't enough. So I just completely dove into self-development programs and did years and years of self-discovery work through Landmark Education and Tony Robbins organizations.
Right. Those were huge too. And again, I think your church group fits in there as well because it helped you to start doing some of that healing, maybe putting some salve on the wounds and helping you to recognize that I don't have to feel this way all the time.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's wonderful. Okay, so I feel like we should dig a little bit more into that because I think people could really benefit from it. So you had therapist, you had Tony Robbins, you had Landmark. What other pieces from your personal development like really came out for you, like really helped you in your healing? Or some of the messages even that, say, Tony Robbins shared?
Well, I mean, Tony's a big advocate for what you said earlier, which is life is really happening for us, not to us. And he always goes on to say, if you're going to blame someone for the crap in your life or what they've put on you negatively, you should also turn around and make sure that you acknowledge them for the good. And I think that is the conversation we just had about, like, how has it benefited me? Because as much as it's harmed, it's also helped, create the person that I am today.
Right.
I think Landmark was pivotal for me in so many ways because until I walked into that program, the Landmark Forum, I was so angry at my mom and resentful of her. I couldn't have compassion or love or forgiveness in my heart for her until I did that work and really started to get what life was like for her, someone trying to raise a family and deal with a mental illness.
Right.
That shifted everything for me. It released me of that anger and really started to like come from a space of love and like, oh my God, like you raised me and you were dealing with that. Like it's a very different paradigm than how dare you do this to me.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, that's beautiful. That is such an important skill to be able to have, to look at things from that different perspective. So unfortunately, we are down to our last little bit of time. So I want to tell people that they can find out more about you, look Michelle up and her book at breakingintomylife.com, which is the name of her book, Breaking Into My Life, where you can get a free excerpt from her book. And you can also encourage your local schools to invite Michelle in to help other kids build a healthy relationship to brain health. Michelle, thank you so much for coming on the show today and sharing such important information and being so open and candid about it. I really greatly appreciate that about you and your book. And I just think it's a really important topic.
You're welcome. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, no problem. I actually think I need to have you come back and we'll talk more about the kid side of it, the school side of it. So thank you again. A big thank you to my listeners. I so appreciate you. With much respect for you and the journey you are on, this is Debbie Pokornik and her guest, Michelle Dickinson-Moravec, wishing you a vibrant and powerful day.
You've been listening to Vibrant, Powerful Moms with host Debbie Pokornik. If you've enjoyed this show, please give us a shout out and leave us a positive review. To find out more about Debbie and her sisterhood of Vibrant, Powerful Moms, visit empoweringenergy.com. That's empowering with letters N-R-G.com.